I didn't really do my bio, and I don't think I've ever even did my bio since I've been here. I'm just kind of like, hi, I'm me. I guess everybody knows what that is. But just giving you a little bit of background on myself, and just so you know, it's 1:37, and this session closes at 2:30, but I'm hoping to be done in about 15 minutes and give us time to talk and hopefully get folks to where they need to go, because I know a lot of people want to make the closing sessions or at least check out of their rooms so they don't get charged an extra day. So I'm going to try and be succinct in what I'm trying to present. But I am a product of a lot of things. I guess the way I'd best describe sort of my role and what I've done throughout my career is I am a Hawaiian woman. I'm a Hawaiian woman through and through. My job has always been to see how I can serve my community best. And about 15 years ago, I was home in Hawaii, and I sat down with a number of really key leaders in our community. And just basically said, what do you want me to do? I know what I want to do, but never mind what I want to do. How can I be of use to our community? And I think I should have had them all sitting simultaneously down at the table together, because they all had different things, and I felt very obligated to do all of them. And because we have this situation where there's one of us graduating, I decided I would just do sort of the overachiever thing and get every degree everybody asked me to do. So it took me 300 years to get through graduate school, and luckily enough people allowed me to kind of be flexible in my education. So I have a degree in health services, but my emphasis is public health informatics. And then I really want to do genetics. So I did a public health genetics degree simultaneously, and then have a master's in social behavioral sciences. And then did that all while simultaneously working for Ralph and building an epidemiology center. It was just one of these things where it was like everybody wanted all of these things. We needed an epidemiologist, a biostatistician, an informaticist, a geneticist. We needed someone who could build programs, who could mentor students. And I said, okay, I'll do it. You know, I had a lot of Red Bull in my system. I was ready to go. And now I was like, yeah, sure, I'll go serve on the board of APHA. Why not? You know, it's just one of those things where you're just like, got to learn to say no. But when you're it, when your community is asking you to serve, the last thing you can do is say, I'm sorry, I'm too busy. When you're it, I'm the first public health faculty that is Native Hawaiian in the entire history of the University of Hawaii, which is on ceded land, which means stolen from the Hawaiian kingdom when we were illegally overthrown. And it's not a new university. This thing has been around a while, and I am the first time they've ever had a faculty that's Native Hawaiian. And the only reason why I did is because of this young lady. Raise your hand, Sharday. Sharday, are you awake? My student, Sharday, who I had the pleasure of getting her, mentoring her through her thesis, basically had a really, she just said, enough already. We want faculty that reflect us. And her, Nicole, who's in with the photos in the back of the room, and Mililani are my three public health students who just said, you know what, enough already. We want professors to be able to answer, how do we as Hawaiians integrate into this university, do Hawaiian things in this university, but still want to be really, really good scientists. Nothing wrong with qualitative colonic. This isn't about which methods. It's about all the methods and how to use it in a way that tells our story using both simultaneously. So I am now extremely accountable to them. And I also have the ability to branch out. So I also have my fourth student here with me, Lealoha Au, who is a Hawaiian language and Hawaiian studies student. Raise your hand so everybody can see you. So, and not only are we working with our public health students, but we have our Hawaiian language students who are saying, you know, I need to figure out how to touch on health as I walk through a graduate degree in Hawaiian studies and Hawaiian language. Our programs are also going to touch on law, they're going to touch on social work, and we have Hawaiians throughout in the institution who are trying to figure out, how do I integrate health, indigenous models of thought, and how do we do it in an institution that also respects the fact that we are Hawaiian people. So what happened recently is, and this is awesome when the actual institution supports the vision, so University of Hawaii did this thing called a cluster hire. So every person who retired at the University of Hawaii, they took 20% of their salary, they put it in a big pot. When they had enough people, enough money in there, they decided they would hire three tenure track positions, and they would call it Indigenous Health. And they have started this program. Currently I'm being reviewed for if I get the job or not, but I'm pretty much teaching all the classes, so you know, they're really screwed if they don't hire me. But because I will leave with all my coursework, and I'll show you what we've done, but it's one of those things. So so we're building an Indigenous health program, and I'm going to talk to you a little bit about sort of why it came about and what this means. So Tisha and Ralph did an amazing job at really sort of setting the groundwork of what folks do when they need the training and the workforce. This is how do we get them in, and what do we want them, what kind of skills do we want them to have? And this isn't just for Indigenous people. And I think, you know, I was watching Tisha's talk, and I love the way that Tisha presents, because I think Tisha really holds true to being a scientist and telling stories. And I'm sure as you were looking at the core values of research, you know, reciprocity, respect, there isn't a people on the planet who are like, oh, we don't want any of that. That's just, that won't work for me. The whole respect and, you know, that's just not applicable. All those, that works for all of our communities. So I think you're starting to get the idea that if we can figure out how to do it for our communities, who are the most vulnerable, who are the most invisible, what we find out and how to make it work for us when we have no numbers, no money, no resources, no support, we can make this work for everybody. So what is Indigenous health? Who offers this degree currently? What competency skills will graduates have? Is there a market for this? Who will benefit from this degree being offered? What will the course load look like? And what is an example course lecture? Are kind of the things I'm going to touch on. So Indigenous health, just for those of you who don't know, the definition of Indigenous that I sort of refer to is the United Nations Declaration, or the United Nations definition of Indigenous people. And it's, we are minorities within our own land. We aren't in a position of power, and we are determined to transmit our knowledge to the next generation. There are some people who are native who are not Indigenous. Constantly I work with Tongan students who are like, I'm Indigenous. I'm like, no. And we are so proud of the fact that no flag has ever flown over Tonga other than the Tongan flag, but you are native. We are Indigenous. We are still fighting for recognition. They are fighting colonization. So the health of Indigenous people is a matter of determining all aspects of their life, including control over their physical environment, of dignity, of community self-esteem, and of justice. Public health practice is particularly important to Indigenous health. Similar to public health, Indigenous people's models of health encompass determinants that range beyond those which are considered within the biomedical model of health. So part of what we're trying to do is help our institutions understand that just like public health, we can't just think about health as the physical well-being. We have to think about the health of our environment. This is basic public health, folks. You know, this is exactly what we've been doing. But we've been doing it and trying to advocate and being turned down because, well, health doesn't encompass your environment. It does for us as Hawaiians, and everyone else also knows, you know, we're kind of all affected by our environment, especially as our environment is being treated very badly. We're all seeing the repercussions of that. So now, currently, where can someone in the United States get a degree in Indigenous health? And Indigenous health is not Native Hawaiian health, because the way that we're structuring this program is it will be global. It'll be a global public health program in Indigenous health. So focusing broadly on Indigenous people throughout the world, no one has ever done anything like on the planet. We will be the first of the place to do this. University of Hawaii is the premier program, but there's been interest for over 15 years, and a lot of key leaders across the world who are doing public health have said, somebody's got to do this. Somebody's got to look at the overlapping intersection between American Indians, Alaska Native, Native Hawaiians, First Nations, Aboriginal Australians, Māori, and what are the common things that we as Indigenous people are facing throughout the world. Existing Indigenous health programs focus on the people in that country. Ours will be diverse in the fact that we will touch on the global public health. Here are a few examples of people who are building training programs. We have the Ponch Center in Australia, Aboriginal Center for Aboriginal Health in University of Victoria. Another example is at University of Washington, yet none of these actually offer degrees in Indigenous health. So what we decided is we need to do this just like public health professionals knew. So we had to come up with competencies. You know, we're good public health professionals. We need some guidelines. We need some rules. And we need everyone to understand that we can play just like everybody else can. And if we have the kind of competencies, people can start to map on the other competencies and how do we integrate into the broader scheme. So this past July, we in Hawaii convened a small group. It's never hard to get people to come to Hawaii. We can always be like, you want to come? Everyone's like, yep, I'll be there. You know. So we had some money to pay for some food, but Ralph came because I begged, and he paid for his own travel. You know, people are, they're excited, they're passionate. He used his miles. I begged him. We fed him well. We gave him lots of Lays. But in July, we had a group of Aboriginal folks from all over the world come together to discuss through levels of competencies. Because our folks, we don't want to just put out really good academic trained MPHs. We also want it to fit the needs of our communities, practitioners, academics, essential for the practice of Indigenous public health. So what we ended up with, for a couple days, we just talked and drafted up some competencies and came up with... hopefully, we're working towards a draft proposal that will help to fund some of these efforts, because right now we don't have any resources. But after this meeting, I'm heading up to the Hill, and I'd like to create the Senator Daniel Akaka School of Public Health and Indigenous Science. So we're going to see what Uncle Danny wants to do. Use of the competencies. The three levels of practice that we're looking at is for academics and educators to design the competency-based education and training, enhance the current existing coursework that's there. For communities and employers, this is the part that we really wanted Ralph to give us some guidance, because he's got to employ these folks. We wanted his guidance on that. So we wanted to talk about career ladders for Indigenous public health professionals. Where do they go in? And Ralph's already doing a lot of really good work at finally helping people through the system. And we talk about a sustainable living. How can you have a job that you can do, get, make a living, and actually serve your community? And this is a really powerful way for our folks to stay involved in their community and make a living at doing it. Developing training plans, position descriptions, job qualifications, and assess the overall public health capacity, because we also don't know what folks are actually doing out there currently. Practitioners and Indigenous public health professionals, assess the current skill levels and create career development plans, and really sort of network and find out what is going on out there and where can our folks go. So we had some really creative folks, there always is, and whenever you're in a group process, it's very interesting as to what comes out. But we ended up with three areas: knowledge, skills, and values. And the knowledge of the competencies that came out of this are understand the historical context of colonization, identify Indigenous-specific determinants of health, identify obstacles to care, support Indigenous knowledge, and articulate the Indigenous lens. I actually am going to tell you what the competencies are so you can see kind of what feeds into it. But these are kind of really big picture types of things at this point. So the skills that came out of this was the ability to publish, to generate new knowledge, data, utility, stigma, informative, and educating. We wanted to talk about communication. We wanted to have our graduates be able to demonstrate active inclusion, teamwork, collaboration, creating informing legislation, community engagement. None of these things are new to public health. We recognize that. And the values were relationality, which is so awesome when we all say the same things, and we weren't at these meetings, but we're all saying the same things: accountability, stewardship, social justice, self-determination, ethical, legal, social issues, and demonstrate advocacy, leadership, and self-care. One of the things that I always tell my students and other people who want to do work in our communities, folks who are not familiar with working with our communities, I always kind of go, are you sure you want to do work in our communities? Because for us, you don't ever get to leave. You know, for me, when I sign a data sharing agreement between myself and another organization, it's usually followed with, I know where you live, I know your family, don't mess this up. You know, so it's not the, here's my data. It's, you will forever, your children, your grandparents, we will talk about you in legend of how you messed up. So don't do that. So we know that, you know, our accountability isn't, you don't ever get to leave when you're part of that community. You can't afford to make any mistakes. And so the stewardship and the accountability, you know, and if you talk to researchers and you tell them, you know, at any point in time, we may say, we don't want you to publish, would you still like to work with us? A lot of them are like, no, if you have that kind of authority and control over the data and you're going to say at any point in time, no, and my entire career is founded on having that kind of publication, do you still want to partner with us? And if they say yes, then we say, okay, we can make that work. But if they say no, okay, I'm not willing to give up that kind of control, then they're not people who we can afford to take the chances with, because although we're probably most likely going to be very supportive because we can help the research process, there has been a lot of harm in our communities, and people are aware of that. And if they understand that, you know, the University of Arizona is still dealing with lawsuits as a result of the Havasupai tribe case, you know, that we don't want to have mistakes happen in our community. So accountability is a huge part, and we need to have that up front and people understand those values. So here are the actual working competencies. Proficiency in techniques of small data sample analysis. Now, there isn't a biostatistician in the world who doesn't think that that's important. And, you know, I mean, we can figure out how to do it because we have no choice. We only have small data. And these are not simple things to do. I mean, this is like the million-dollar question in statistics. But we need to make that work for our communities. And how do you use what you've got to tell a story? So we are, you know, part of what I want to help create at the University of Hawaii is we're going to be scrutinized, looked at constantly as, is this really a worthwhile program? If I can make it valuable to every single other person and group on campus, they will help us survive and build. And that's part of the benefit is if we can be useful to the entire group because we've come up with some pretty interesting techniques to answer questions that nobody else can answer, those methods can be used across the board. And we're really hoping to develop scientists that can really embrace that and be passionate about it and make that work. Analyze key comparative health indicators for Indigenous people. Analyze key comparative indicators regarding the social determinants of health for Indigenous people. Just thinking broadly, I'm developing the curriculum for our newest course, which is Native Hawaiian Health, and it looking at social determinants of health for Native Hawaiians. We're looking at canoeing as a form of a determinant of health and the ability to voyage across the ocean. We're looking at language. We're looking at all the other things, of course, that are in there, but we also have to look at how colonization has affected our people. How do you measure that? How do we know that our millions of dollars that had gone in federal dollars as well into rebuilding our canoes for traditional voyaging, and now they're doing a worldwide voyage, this impacts our health. How does hula impact our health? Two of my students are competition expert hula dancers, and this affects their wellness. We need to know how to measure that as we look at the health of our people. There currently doesn't exist ways to do that if we look at our existing models, and we know that has a huge impact on that, and we have to think very creatively on how do we measure these other things that impact our health and wellness, or the absence of those things. How does that affect us? Describe Indigenous people's health in a historical context and analyze the impact of colonial process on health outcomes. That was that. Critically evaluate health Indigenous public health programs, policy or programs. Every day I'm being asked, has $14 million that's allocated to the Native Hawaiian health system made a difference? In 17 years, they have never produced an annual report, ever. And Senator Inouye and Senator Cocker are saying we can't afford to have programs that have no outcomes. But we didn't have anybody measuring outcomes before. We did the Indian Health Service diabetes clinical audit, and Nicole, who got dragged into it, did all the work in putting out a report that we've produced, but not really sure if anyone even knows how to use it yet. So we're still in the early stages. We have outcomes. We know where the money, some of the money's going. But, you know, we really need to teach our communities also how to use that data. Apply the principles of economic evaluation to Indigenous programs with a particular focus on the allocation of resource relative to the need. That one, that one. And demonstrate the reflexive public health practice for Indigenous people's health contexts. So these are some of the competencies that we're hoping to introduce. The whole process of creating a program, I had to introduce the competencies. It's going to have to go to the bureaucracy of the university. But because a lot of these map onto the existing competencies that are there, and that's one of the exercises that we're going to need to do is show where students are already doing similar types of things to get the academic institution to support this type of work. So in the last couple of seconds, I want to talk a little bit about where is the market for this kind of work? So this is an example of, this is part of the Affordable Care Act. Subject to the availability of appropriations, the secretary acting through the director of the Centers of Disease Control and Prevention shall establish an epidemiology and laboratory capacity grant program to award state health departments as well as those in health departments in tribal jurisdictions to meet such criteria the director determines appropriate. So the fact that you see in there that the language now is integrated into our legislation that says that these are things that are up and coming. It's not, oh yeah, they have a tribal health program. This is integrated into the language of the way we do business in this country because folks like Ralph and myself and Tisha have been effective at saying, you know, We are here, we have a relationship with you, and we'd like to make sure that we are accountable in doing the work for our own communities. But if these things go through and you have one person graduating, there's a lot of demand on that person and a lot of pull. We sit around and talk about, well, where's so-and-so working? Can we take them away? You know, and we talk about how, what it would take to get them to leave that program, you know, and we do that. We move around from program to program and we fight each other for the staffing that's there. It would be so nice to have so many graduates that we could look for money to fund the amazing ones that we've got instead of trying to figure out how we can entice the ones that are there away from where they're at. And I'm in Hawaii, so really, look out. We got the most beautiful place on the earth. Of course, we can't pay them anything, but we're hoping love will bring them to the islands. And the other, for those, is just the plug on the epicenters. You know, for folks who don't know, the epicenters exist. There's currently 15 now. So there's 11 tribal, one urban that Ralph runs. There's the Native Hawaiian one, which I run, and I'll tell you a little bit about. There's a Pacific Islander one. Those two are currently unfunded. And now CDC is funding the Pacific Island jurisdiction. Another partner who should be involved in APHA is the fact that you have 5 island nations that are part of the U.S. that have really unique problems because we bombed them in testing our nuclear warheads. And those are the people who have relationships with this nation, and we need to provide them with health resources and be able to monitor what's going on. So we're hoping that we can deploy and help them with resources in public health, including graduates. So I think many of you may or may not know the epicenters. They were started in 1996 with core funding from the Indian Health Service. And they were focused to build public health capacity in American Indian Alaska Native communities. So it was the capacity building then. And the tribal epicenters are divisions of nonprofit organizations working with tribal entities in American Indian Alaska Native communities. Except for, I would just say, I'll just leave it at that. Here's my epicenter, the Native Hawaiian Epidemiology Center, which was established in 2009 when I went home and said, okay, I'm ready. I'm coming home. My daughters need to be in their immersion programs. And so we moved home, even though I wasn't quite done, and Ralph wouldn't let me leave. And so I worked in 3 places simultaneously, and it was a lot of fun. But we're now home, and Nicole's my first employee. Division of Papa'ololokahi, with the authorization from the Native Hawaiian Healthcare Improvement Act, which is in the health care reform bill, authorized again. So we have legislation to support this, just no money to support this. And we serve Native Hawaiians throughout the nation. But, you know, we're working on that. We're trying to build our capacity. We're hoping that we'll have resources eventually to hire more staff, but we're hoping to do this work. And our primary services, you know, are to provide technical assistance to the organizations that serve Native Hawaiians, produce and develop national reports. No national reports really are effectively representing Native Hawaiians and Pacific Islanders. And if folks made it to my previous session that I did yesterday, it's because they can't analyze the data. It's not that they don't have data on our populations. It's just that the federal mandate to separate Native Hawaiians from Asians was created in 1997, was it, when it was passed in 2003, was when it was mandated. There's still only like 20-some states that are actually doing that. And so each year as they bring data on, I have the data now. Vital Statistics handed us the entire data sets for the nation. But it's non-trivial, if you talk to an IT person, to build a data system that allows you to query that complex, millions and millions of records. But we built it. And we built it with a shoestring budget. We have it on Excel in pivot tables, and we're going to deploy it via the web to every community that's out there because we really want people to access it. So we are trying to not only make data liberated for our communities, but also teach people how to use it and understand how they can advocate with it. We come to things like this, even though this is the greatest numbers I've seen in any Indigenous session since I've been here, and I'm delighted. Of course, I know that we've kind of filled the room with all our friends and family, and all of you who weren't already, you now are friends and family. You have to come to all of our sessions from now on. But, you know, to present these at broader sessions, and that's why we introduce the theme every year, because we really want people to see Indigenous health can really help to inform. If we could figure out how to help our models get deployed. You know, we talk about environment, we talk about workforce, we talk about all these things with no money, with no resources, with a lot of excitement and all sorts of political pressure. I would think people could really learn from how creative we've had to be. And I hope that someday it becomes even bigger sessions and more, not on the last day, or the very last session for the entire conference. We're hoping that we can, you know, help people really find value in some of the work that we're doing. And I know that people are scared to death that I will sort of take over the governing board. I won't, but I will. I won't, because I am a good steward of being a good board member. But at least people now go, oh yeah, Hawaiians. That's right. So hopefully, Indigenous people will at least be there and be present and be able to have a say. But we're trying to be more present in this. Serve as a clearinghouse for information. We are that place that people go, what's going on with Hawaiians? And they call, and we hopefully are there to answer the phone. And then we also design and perform research and grow new researchers and provide them a place to do the work. And it's really a wonderful place to be able to do this work. So I'm at 2 o'clock right now. I have a bunch more slides, but I just want to, talk a little bit about, I want to kind of give you an idea of what the coursework is and then go into a conversation, because I know folks are going to have to leave. But here are the 5 courses that will make up the Indigenous Health Program: Indigenous Methods, Native Hawaiian Health, Cultural Competency, Assessment and Instrument Design, and I teach Indigenous Health Ethics, Law, and Politics. And I'm just going to give you like a really quick learning objectives from that course. We describe pertinent theories of healthcare ethics and how they affect or relate to Indigenous people. Understand and describe the historical context of health ethics, law, and politics as they relate to Indigenous people. Understand the main players of healthcare policy making in the political system. Recognizing and understanding the intersecting issues of policy and law with healthcare and ethics. Apply knowledge of healthcare policies and politics to the theories of healthcare ethics to critical issues in public health affecting Indigenous communities. I wanted to show you this because I wanted you to understand that when I teach this course, I do an overview of 5 countries: New Zealand, Australia, Canada, US, and Hawaii. And in there, they learn the basics of what goes on in that country as a whole for the majority population, and then they have to learn the Indigenous issues that pertain there. So for the United States, it's American Indian, Alaska Native, American Indian, then Alaska Native, and Native Hawaiian that they're required to understand what the colonization, how that happened, the differences between, treaties, like in New Zealand, where they had the Treaty of Waitangi, which means equal participation, versus Australia, which was terra nullius, which was, they weren't even human when they arrived. So my students have to understand this wide diversity of things. They understand the mainstream system, and they have to learn about how it applies to Indigenous people and how Indigenous people interact in that. My students were so overworked and stressed. They will vouch. They worked harder probably in that course than any other course, probably because they also didn't want to let me down. They knew that they had to do well. But also the fact that it was just, it directly applied to what they were doing, and they learned a lot. And so those are those things that our students are going to come out being solid public health professionals, and they will understand how to serve their community. So with that, I'm going to stop and go to questions, and actually questions for the whole group. And I think we're comfortable enough that we can all just talk and interact. So I'm going to sit down, but go, Ed.